It's a pleasure to be here tonight. At my age, it's a pleasure to be anywhere. I didn't know that I would be expected to speak tonight, so everything is strictly off the cuff. I probably am the only living person who was a member of Potter Club during the first academic year when Potter Club functioned during the year 1931-32. We have, over the years, had many, many reports of how Potter Club came about and a bit of what things were like at the beginning. And Paul mentioned what I consider to be a very real bit of information about the early days of Potter Club that was written by Bernie Kerbal. Bernie was one, this was written almost 30 years after the fact, in 1960. And Bernie was one of the original 13, according to his account, that were responsible for bringing about the formation of Potter Club. And because Bernie was one of the youngest members of the 13, he was able to see how Potter Club functioned in its first 2 years of life, because he was a member of the class of 33. And there's much that he says in there that has meaning. I would like to quote one sentence from Bernie's report. He could have written it in italics. What he said was, quote, "Originally, Potter Club was not thought of as a fraternity, and that could be never said truer than that, because I had the opportunity in the academic year of 1931-32 to come to Albany as a very verdant freshman. And as the year wore on, it was not until the second semester that two other Pottermen, they're listed in your list of Muscania, Ken Christian and John Bills, two other freshmen and myself joined Potter Club. In those days, Potter Club was not putting on any pressure for membership. There were no such things as the usual fall push for membership. Joining Potter Club was a very casual kind of thing. It was almost as though somebody had left to go shopping and didn't lock the door, and when they came back, somebody was sitting on the couch. At that time, of course, not all 13 of the original members were around, because as Bernie explained things, the fellows who formed Potter Club had worked very hard in the year 30-31, and it was not until virtually the end of that academic year that Potter Club really came into being. They'd had to work with President Brubaker. They'd had to do a lot of things to get the show on the road. And that was why the 7 of those 13 members, they're listed over their picture. 3, 4, 5 of them were Muscadia members that had been working with the president. They were no longer around as undergraduates. Many of them were Albany boys and were still hanging around as alumni when Potter Club began to function during the first academic year of 31-32. That left only 6 other Potter men as active ventures, and 4 of those were seniors. So the original, I call them charter members, of Potter Club faded away rather soon. But don't kid yourself that they were not exercising a tremendous influence during the first couple of years of Potter Club's existence, because many of them, even as alumni, were living in Albany, were doing graduate work, or as some of them, it wasn't at all uncommon in those days. You want to remember, we're talking about the days of depression, the early 30s. That's one way in which perhaps the environment was different than some of you people remember in a few days, in a few decades later. They exercised influence way beyond their small numbers in the doings of Potter Club at that time. Potter Club had a relatively small number of members. They were not recruiting. If you look in the lists here that shows in your book the names of those who've passed on, you don't, in those early years, find more than 4, 5, 6 names, and that's all there were, per class. The first year, as we operated, as I said, I didn't join, and it was unusual in some instances for a freshman to join Potter Club at that time. And it had no place to meet, so they had arranged a workout, an arrangement with the YMCA downtown to use a dusty old room that had a table and a few chairs. And it was here on Sunday afternoons in my freshman year that I met with other Potter men. I see the first 4 years of Potter Club as rather distinctly 2 different types of operation. I didn't join a fraternity. I joined a club. It was very much a club. It was, as Bruni had said, they did not look upon Potter Club as a fraternity at that point. And Bruni goes on to mention one other thing. He goes on to mention that at the end of 2 years of operation, where was Potter Club listed in the annual yearbook? It was listed under activities, along with all the other clubs, the French club, any kind of club. The word club is so broad anyway that it covers a lot of activity. And I would have to say that not a great deal was accomplished by Potter Club in those first 2 years. If you look in your book here under the presidents, I'll be talking a little bit about some of these people. To them, they're only names. To me, they're faces. Our first president, of course, was Sammy Dorrance. And our second president, you see what happened. You had 13 original members. 7 were never around except as alumni. 6 were left to operate in the first year. 4 of them were seniors. So where were you at the end of the first year? You had 2 candidates for president. One of them was Burley, a senior. And the other was, you see his picture here, he looks like a kid. Gurney Rand. And this was the only time they elected Gurney president. This was the only time the Potter Club had a president who wasn't a senior, he was a junior. And Glennon was still around for a third year. Previously, I said I thought I saw 2 Potter Clubs. One which was not setting the world on fire, that was not building membership. And what happened at the end of the second year of Glennon Rand's presidency as a junior was that we elected a fellow by the name of Charlie Robeson. And in my judgment, Charlie Robeson did more than any other person that I know of to move Potter Club in the direction of becoming a fraternity. The first thing he told us in the spring when he was elected that we were going to get off our duff and get out and do some recruiting, which they had never done before. And it happened that we had one member who was bringing his brother in the next year. And I have a feeling that they started working even during the summer. My pedagogy shows that in that second year, there were 6 members of Potter Club, members of that class, and that KDR had 16 against 6. That was what Charlie Robeson said, we're going to make some changes. And he lit a fire under Potter Club. You see, we were in a position to blindside KDR. They never had had any competition. And the interesting thing is, it was 16-6 in favor of KDR that second year. But after Charlie got through working the members over and getting them to really get out there, exactly the opposite was true in that third year of Charlie Robeson. We brought in 16 new members. It practically doubled the size of Potter Club. And I have to mention one thing in particular about those 16. I've always felt that the people who lived in Albany or lived at home had a little advantage in adjusting to college life compared to us guys that came in and had to go and live at a bed and breakfast situation in somebody's home. They were living at home. They knew where the food was coming from. They had a place over their head. And in many, many instances, they were graduates of Albany High School, at that time located at the corner of Lake Avenue and Western Avenue. All they had to do was look out the window and they had a bird's eye view of the whole campus. They probably knew people who were already in college. And this fellow that I mentioned, who was bringing in his brother, the interesting thing about the 16 that came in that third year, 8 of them were from Albany. They were people that didn't need any of these orientation programs for new students. They could have written the book because they lived in town, they knew people. In this instance, one of these had a brother just a year ahead of him. These eight people, they never went by this name. But I kind of thought of them as the Albany Mafia, as far as membership, because they hit the ground running. One of their leaders was this fellow, Jack Murphy. You see his picture as the sixth president. He was their leader. And I don't think I ever saw anybody who was as natural a politician as Jack Murphy. As a matter of fact, I think there were times when I rather suspected that there must have been some family membership relationship with the O'Connell brothers, who owned and operated Albany for many, many years. Because one of the first things Jack did was to get himself elected as president of the freshman class. And he brought along one of his buddies as treasurer. And the next year he got himself re-elected president class. And he eventually got to be a distinguished American, an alumnus, if you look at the records here. These eight people also produced two distinguished alumni. Now, two out of eight, 25%, is a pretty good batting average. These eight were a nucleus for Potter action for years to come. I think my friend sitting over here, who was a graduate in 39, I think he will remember the role that these people played. As a matter of fact, he told me one time that one of the guys was the one that tapped him on the shoulder and was responsible for bringing him into the club. Now, things began to change in that third year. And I don't want to fault the first 2 years too much, because after all, Potter Club was a new organization. All new organizations struggle a bit in their beginning years. They have to take time, in this case, to more or less determine what do we want to do for our organization? Where are we going to go? And how are we going to do it? And for that reason, there's not a lot that I can remember that Potter Club accomplished in the first 2 years. Of course, I hadn't joined the organization until the second semester. But, and I think it's probably the truth, because my memory is not that bad. I didn't see a lot of action those first 2 years. But then in the third year, things began to jump. And one of the things that Potter Club decided was a great deal of campus activity focuses around class organization. You think of yourself as a burdened freshman or a grand old senior or something in between. And at that time, a great deal of campus activity focused around class organization, competition, and so forth. And that was one of the reasons that Potter Club set its sight on electing the officers, like Jack Murphy was doing. And you saw Potter Club moving very fast into making a place for itself in all phases of college life. There was one thing that was very seriously lacking for Potter Club. Potter Club had no house of its own. And any of you guys who've ever lived in a Potter house know how important having your house is. It's the focus of so much of your club activity. And Potter Club had no house. But there was a development in the third year under Charlie Robeson that was a kind of a precedent. As I said, if you didn't live in Albany and didn't commute and live at home, why you lived in a kind of a bed and breakfast arrangement for two semesters, because so many people during the Depression were opening their homes to a few student members. It helped pay the rent or the mortgage or whatever. But living in the bed and breakfast arrangement was not too satisfying. At the end of 2 years, five of the Potter Clubs who had been living in bed and breakfast on Ontario Street decided that it was time to try a different arrangement. So we went out and we corralled two other members who were not Potter members, and we rented a little house right across the street on Washington Avenue, right across from the college. It was the first house, it's no longer there, it's been gone for a long time. It was the first house right next to that Unitarian church. And we operated not really as a Potter House that year because we weren't all Potter men, but we did learn what it took to make for cooperative life, doing everything, cooking your meals, buying everything. And at the end of that year, as we moved to the fourth year, we were doing well in competing, but we were not surprising KDR this year, and things broke even. But what happened that fourth year was that the five Potter men took in two more. And this little, actually it was operating under the name of Chiseler's Inn, became a kind of a pseudo Potter House, which was good because we were so closely located to the campus. It was easy for people between classes to drop by, and there was quite a group of in the five. Two were the seniors, one was a Muscania member, the other was the president of the club. There were two other Muscania, would-be future Muscania members down the line. One's a junior, another is a sophomore. And there was talent, and there was nearness, and it was, in a way, a forerunner for a Potter House, the first one on Ontario Street. I have already taken too much time. I would simply summarize things at this point by asking the question, did Potter Club ever become a fraternity? If so, when did it happen? I think it was moving well toward a fraternity by the end of the fourth year, I believe it was 1937 when the Interfraternity Council was first formed. You hadn't needed anything as long as KDR was the only act on the street. The sororities had had an inter-sorority council for years. If, and I'm pretty sure the inter-fraternity council was formed by 37, it was an indication that there was more than one fraternity operating by that time. If I look in my pedagogue and thumb through looking for Potter Club, I find it all over the place. Because we were dominating the class offices. We were having our share of Muscania members. We were active in practically every phase of college campus activity, whether you were talking about music or any of the newspapers, student government, you name it. You'd see pictures of Potterman at the end of 4 years. And at the end of 4 years, harking back to those first years of meeting in a dusty room in the YMCA, and what was going on at this point. Potter Club had a membership of 41 members. It was active in all school activities. It was on its way. There was a feeling that it was in good hands. The Albany Mafia still had years to go. And I think you could say that there was a feeling of confidence that maybe Potter Club was in good hands and would have a bright future. But you, who came along in those years, would know that better than I. Thank you.